Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:11 a.m. Central Time, and today's March 1st. I'm recording a little earlier today because I'm going to fly back to Los Angeles, and by the time I get home, it will be at least 7 or 8 hours after the close. So I think probably earlier rather than later might have been is a better way to do this. Starting off in China, you can think about the fact that the CSI 300 has been pulling back for nearly 2 weeks, so it's been leading the decline on Wall Street, but it is also steadying here in the region of the lower side of the range. And then we can think about the fact that the renminbi has been one of the most or the strongest currencies over the last few months, but it hasn't really been doing much of anything since the beginning of 2021. So this doesn't move on its own. There's obviously been a government decision that as of the 1st of January, then the appreciation of the renminbi is going to stop. And that's also something that is worth considering, because there is no country wants a strong currency. Some need a weaker currency more than others. Well, China's not in the category of needing a weaker currency at present. Its economy has rebounded from the pandemic a bit quicker than anywhere else. But there is, of course, the question about how are the countries that largely avoided the pandemic going to come out of the lockdowns, because they haven't reached herd immunity, whereas much of the rest of the world has, or is on the cusp of reaching herd immunity, either through a large number of infections, reported or otherwise, together with a very wide vaccination program. Vaccinating over 1 billion people is a gargantuan task. So then the question, of course, is China really doing it? And how quickly will China's economy open up again? As we look towards reflation and the starting up of international travel again and regular commerce, there's only really so much that can be done over a Zoom call. Eventually, we're going to have to get back to business travel. And at that stage, are we going to have passports for travel and that inoculation cards? It's not like it would be the first time in history something like that has been passed. It's, I think, probably quite likely. Of course, the anti-vaccination movement are going to be incensed at the very suggestion that that's even likely. But when we think about countries like Japan or China, and the massive trade shows that they used to hold, and also the large number of people that would go there and have in-person discussions and try to form relationships, then you don't really have the security when you're online of who you're talking to if you've never met someone before. That's one of the most important things that has sort of been made clear by the pandemic, that it's very easy to communicate with people that you know via Zoom, but what about the people you don't know? And then when it's you've got social media apps that are coming up and have been around for quite some time that allow strangers to talk to one another, but it's not quite the same thing to transact business together. So these are important questions for how China continues with its economic revival. Of course, they are moving much more towards a domestic demand story, and obviously that is less dependent on international travel, but nonetheless, the massive surpluses, that are foreign account surpluses that China runs, are completely dependent on foreign trade. Then when we think about what else is going on? Well, there's been a rather significant military crackdown in Myanmar, and of course that's also a satellite country from the perspective of China. When we look at India, then the market was in positive territory today. It continues to hold its sequence of higher reaction lows. It's still a bull market environment overall. There's a lot of discussion in the USA right now about the wisdom of passing a $1.9 trillion stimulus. And I think Larry Summers was quite clear in pointing out that the when he was in the Obama administration, the size of the stimulus relative to the shortfall was a fraction of the shortfall, whereas today the size of the stimulus relative to the shortfall is a multiple. So there's obviously going to be inflationary pressures arise as a result of that, and it's one of the prime. Well, of course, the point I was going to make is that India has already passed their fiscal stimulus, and that's what the stock market is reflecting. India is running a significant deficit right now, and then that does help to inflate asset prices. So they are definitely trying to stimulate the economy. Obviously, when it comes time to pay back some of these debts, then it will be a more difficult environment, but that's somewhere out in the future. The big thing that happened last week was the bond yield just about everywhere jumped higher until Friday, and on the last day of the month it pulled back again. But as we enter March, then the yield has steadied. This big question about what will central banks do? There is this massive potential draw from governments from the bond market, and bond investors have been really rather quiet over the last decade because they were pretty much guaranteed they weren't going to lose money. Even though yields were at ridiculously low levels, then nobody was really complaining because the Federal Reserve was buying them and supporting the market. Now, as governments have seemingly come to believe that money is free and always will be, then bond investors are waking up to the reality that central banks may not be all that willing to continue to buy those bonds. And at least that question is one of the main reasons for this surge in yields over the course of the last month in particular. Of course, it's hard to imagine that central banks aren't going to persist along the set of I guess on the path that they've already laid for themselves would probably be the best way to think about it, because this isn't anything different than they've been doing for a decade. And in order to really change, then there would have to be a massive dislocation in the markets. And all other evidence to the contrary, it looks increasingly likely that the Federal Reserve is doing nothing but watching the stock market, and every time it pulls back by about 10%, then they come back in with another significant round of additional stimulus. And they may not, and of course, then you have the discussion that is likely to become much more relevant over the next 2 weeks about a standing repo facility. They said they don't have a standing repo facility, but they, in de facto terms, they do. Because whenever the repo market runs into a liquidity problem, they have to step in and provide additional liquidity. As the holder of the reserve currency, the US has no choice. When the global money markets run dry, then they have to step in and provide liquidity. And as long as that remains the case, then the US dollar will remain the reserve currency, but they have to be willing to step in and provide that liquidity. And that means then that as we think about the stock market, we're due some consolidation. We've had a really impressive advance over the course of the last year. There are a lot of people now talking about a bubble and thinking that, and of course, most people who talk about a bubble, they talk about it in very negative terms. But a bubble is generally the time when you make money fastest and where people give up jobs and decide that they can make more money from trading and that everybody is invested. A lot of the angst that is being expressed right now is because people are not fully invested, and they really wish that they could get a pullback in order to buy again. So that's not really a recipe for the end of a bubble. It might be an inflating bubble, and we might have the potential for additional upside because of the angst that's being expressed, but at the top of a bubble, at the top of a massive bull market, nobody is expressing fear. Everybody is resigned to the fact that prices can only go up forever. And I just don't believe that we're there right now. Nevertheless, there is a significant portion of the market which is extremely interest rate sensitive. And any time bond yields pop on the upside, it takes a tax on these types of innovation companies. Then, of course, we had the significant pullback in copper last week, and then it has at least steadied in here today. This is more of a secular bull market hypothesis because governments all over the world are completely intent on reflating their economies. It's the only thing that they know will help to placate rest of populations. It's also the only thing that might help them to hold on to their jobs. So they are going to try and give the people what they think they want, which is green energy. There's going to be a lot more investment in it. And then we can think about what that investment is going to entail. It means more transmission lines. It means much more renewable energy generating capacity. I saw a video in here today about a rather large solar project in China, and they went through all of the benefits that it had helped with desertification. It helped to bring back farmers and supplement incomes in the region, and at no point did they talk about the cost. At no point did they talk about how much energy it is producing. They simply talked about the number of jobs that it created. But anybody can create jobs building infrastructure. The really beneficial thing for society is building infrastructure that can pay for itself in terms of economic benefits over time. Then when I thought it was particularly interesting, they were talking about it previously being an area which had suffered from desertification, and it was right next to a lake, and that the solar panels needed to be washed about once a month. So in an area which had previously suffered from a lack of water, there suddenly was plenty of water around to clean these solar panels. If one wanted to poke holes in the logic of this kind of promotional video, then it would be incredibly easy. But it would largely be beside the point, because when people see these types of things, they get really enthused by the power of the solar sector and pay no attention to whether it's going to be a good investment over the long term. Because right now, these kinds of projects can make economic sense without recourse to subsidies. But of course, they are highly dependent on interest rates. Now, we've seen a significant pullback in the solar ETF, and it is steadying, at least on Friday. But of course, the big question will be about what happens with bond markets. So there are big questions to be asked around that. Then we can think about some of the more fragile emerging markets. Because if the dollar is going to, or if the dollar continues to rally because interest rates are rising, then that is the kind of issue that could cause problems for countries with large quantities of debt denominated in dollars. So the South African rand had been advancing since March, but it has at least paused around the 15 area. The Brazilian real had also been a currency that declined extremely quickly in the early part of 2020, and it is now weakening again. So this is also an issue, because we've had a meaningful move in commodity prices, and generally that would be positive for commodity currencies, but that's not apparently what's happening at present. Then if we think about some of the other rather fragile currencies, the Turkish lira had a really rather significant downward dynamic last week, and That's also suggestive of some stress. So obviously it has strengthened somewhat in here today. There is I think a sigh of relief that markets did not continue lower today. But the big question for some of those fragile currencies is whether they can continue to advance and benefit from the reflation trade, and will they be rescued from some of the more difficult financial environment and problems that they've had over the course of the last few years. I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.